Welcome to the Centre for Journalism News Radio with your presenters, Jem Collins and Ricky Clark. Here are the main headlines. David Cameron plans to tackle troubled families. The American flag was lowered in Baghdad today. And former French President Jacques Chirac has been given a 2-year suspended prison sentence.
David Cameron has announced plans for a network of troubleshooters to support problem families that will cost the government £448 million, although 60% of the funding will be provided by local councils. Families which are to be classified as troubled will need to meet 5 out of 7 criteria, including truanting children, parents with addiction and antisocial behaviour. The Prime Minister spoke earlier today on the types of action troubleshooters will take on problem families.
It might be getting the kids into school, it might be making sure they're properly fed, it might be sorting out a dysfunctional relationship between a mum and her child, it might be the fact they aren't going to the right school. It's identifying the problem and actually acting on it. The key word here is action.
A formal end to the US military operations in Iraq was signalled by the lowering of the American flag in Baghdad after nearly 9 years of fighting. The US Defence Secretary, Leon Panetta, says everything will be done to support Iraq, even after officially leaving the country.
Iraq will be tested in the days ahead by terrorism, by economic and social issues, by the demands of democracy itself. Challenges remain, but the United States will be there to stand by the Iraqi people.
Former French President Jacques Chirac has been given a 2-year suspended prison sentence after being found guilty of diverting public funds and abusing public trust. Mr. Chirac was not in court to hear the verdict because of ill health, but denied any wrongdoing. After being convicted of embezzling public funds to illegally finance his Conservative Party, Chirac will become the first former head of state in France to face prosecution since the Second World War.
There has been a significant increase in the number of students in England who are turning to prostitution to fund their education. The National Union of Students, who published their report, also say students are turning to gambling and medical experiments to cover increasing living costs and tuition fees.
Colin Myler, ex-editor of the News of the World, today gave evidence at the Leveson inquiry for the second day running. He accepted that phone hacking had occurred during his time as editor, but stressed it was rarely used and blamed one rogue reporter for hacking. He likened wrongdoing at the News of the World to bombs under the newsroom floor.
I always had some discomfort. I felt that there could have been bombs under the newsroom floor, but I didn't know where they were, and I didn't know when they were going to go off.
Official figures released by the government have shown that more than 1,300 primary schools in England are failing to adequately teach English and maths. A third of 11-year-olds are also not achieving the results they should be in reading, writing and arithmetic. Schools Minister Nick Gibb gave his reasons behind the lack of achievement.
But why are they underperforming? What sort of reasons are coming out of this?
It can be a range of reasons. It could be leadership, it could be the approach to teaching children, whether it's reading or arithmetic or science. And so that's why as a government we have given all schools up to £3,000 of match funding to enable them to buy phonics materials and training for teachers, because we do believe very strongly that children need to be taught the mechanics of reading very early in their primary education.
New laws have been introduced today which could see dog owners jailed for 2 years if their pet harms another person in a public place. The new rules would also cover the prosecution of owners of dangerously out of control or banned dogs.
The Ministry of Defence has confirmed the exact numbers of troops that will help the police during next year's Olympic Games. 13,500 military personnel will provide security during London 2012 at 150 venues and training sites. The number is significantly higher than the 7,000 that had been widely expected. Defence Secretary Philip Hammond says there's no cause for alarm.
Every Olympics since Atlanta has had a significant military component around its security. Our allies and our friends would expect us to deliver the same.
Prince William's and Kate Middleton's April marriage attracted the fastest rising number of Google searches in Britain last year. Royal Wedding beat iPhone 5 in the internet giant's annual survey of the most inquired about new terms. Other terms to show a sharp increase in interest included the singer Adele, computer game FIFA 12 and Groupon.
8 years after the invasion, President Obama has announced the last US troops will leave Iraq by Christmas. He has visited Fort Bragg Army Base in North Carolina to meet troops who have just returned from a tour of duty in the country. He thanked them for their service, saying America's war will be over.
As your Commander-in-Chief, and on behalf of a grateful nation, I'm proud to finally say these two words, and I know your families agree. Welcome home. Welcome home.
The US Defense Secretary, Leon Panetta, stepped off his military plane in Baghdad on Thursday as the leader of America's war in Iraq, but will leave as one of many top US and global officials who hope to work with the struggling nation as it tries to find its new place in the Middle East and the broader world. As the final American forces will be withdrawn within the next couple of weeks, Panetta says they will be leaving behind a stable country.
Violence levels are down. Al-Qaeda has been weakened. The rule of law has been strengthened. Educational opportunities have been expanded. And economic growth is expanding as well.
I have with me Hind Al-Joker, who has the latest on the story.
Yes, well, Iraq is supposed to be a lot more stable now that the war has ended. However, Iraq has been destroyed. It's not like the Americans are leaving behind the modern schools or big factories. They're leaving thousands of orphans and widows. On the other hand, during a stop in Afghanistan this week, Panetta described the mission as making the country sovereign and independent and able to govern and secure itself. But Iraq is one of the most difficult countries in the world due to its geographic location and demographic makeup. Mistakenly, America thought Western democracy was an ultimate resolution to Iraq's shortcomings, which is a common American prescription for all ailing nations. In Iraq, it was tried and has mistakenly failed. Thus, when the American troops depart, they leave behind an undemocratic and chaotic country.
That was Hind Al-Joker talking about the Americans leaving Iraq.
With reports coming out that troops are not receiving appropriate mental care following their return from service, reporter Laura Griffith spoke to psychotherapist Martin Polkoff, chief purser of the Longboat Home, which is a low-cost service designed to offer help to ex-service men and women who want somebody to speak to.
The Longboat Home, yes. We provide support for all ex-servicemen and their wives and their family. It is problematic, but one of the great things about the troops is they don't ask for care very much. That's the problem. They live in a community which asking for care is rather a disgrace. And so it tends to be they don't come forward very easily if there are any mental problems. The major problem that troops have coming back is normally something like alcoholism, depression, anxiety, failure to thrive in civilian life. But alcohol is very much an armed forces problem anyway, because subsidised, encouraged. So drug usage within the forces is highly discouraged. It really is doesn't happen. Well, you get fired. But alcoholism is encouraged. It's culturally acceptable within the forces and without. And if you look up the numbers on there, men are three times as more likely to have alcohol problems and women about six times as more likely in the forces. That is a problem. Problems that we deal with are relational problems, mostly, i.e. the problems within the families, divorce, problems with the relationship with children, problems coming back into a family after being away for so long.
MPs on the Defence Committee are worried about the help that injured servicemen and women will get after UK combat operations in Afghanistan come to an end. More than 760 UK personnel have been seriously or very seriously injured in Iraq and Afghanistan. James Arbuthnot, the chair of the Defence Committee, praises what he calls the first-class medical treatment and rehabilitation provided by the Ministry of Defence, but warns of major concerns about whether the support will be sustainable in the long term.
Look at what they've done and what they've sacrificed for the country. And so we're worried that the resources may reduce at a time when the need for them may actually be increasing.
With troops turning to alcoholism rather than people for help, there is a rising need for the organisations established for this purpose to encourage troops to ask for help rather than feel like they have to hide.
The National Union of Students has said that there are a larger number of students who are not only turning to prostitution, but gambling and medical experiments to fund their university education. There is a lot of financial pressure on students, with a large cut in student support from the government and the current high unemployment figures. This has led to students finding other means of funding their university life. The amount of students who are gambling for money is concerning, and helplines want there to be a greater awareness for students about the consequences. James McLaren, the spokesman for Gamescare, GamCare, sorry, an agency which gives support to people dealing with gambling problems, gave his views on the matter.
The National Union of Students has claimed that there's a large number of students who are turning to desperate measures such as prostitution, gambling and medical experiments to fund their university education. James McLaren, the spokesman for GamCare, an agency which gives support to people dealing with gambling problems, told us why students may be turning to gambling and the need for greater awareness about the consequences.
It is a concern for us, the number of students who are calling us. Having a poor understanding of what gambling is about and how it all works is a real problem. We've recently advised the government that we would like to see gambling education on the national curriculum. And we would like to have support of student unions. I know that we have worked with them in the past, but I mean that's a very important way to sort of get our message across to those who need it.
Mr. McLaren stresses that there are many other means of obtaining financial support and recommends where students should turn to for advice.
Gambling is not a way to make money. And if you do feel like you're running into trouble, then call GamCare. Go and see your student welfare advisors. And the earlier you do it, the better.
Minor medical experiment, but he reveals that bigger experiments have been offered to students.
How did you find out about the medical experiments?
Our university sent out emails to people in different departments.
And what were the medical experiments that you took part in?
I've only done one. It was just a case of touching different materials and they record your response to it. There's one for if you have lower wisdom teeth pain, you can get your lower wisdom teeth taken out and they give you £500.
Yeah.
One condition where they give you painkillers after the operation, the other one is where you don't have anything.
Would you encourage other students to take part in medical experiments?
I'd encourage them to look at the actual description of the study before they do it.
With the tuition fees rising next year and high unemployment rates, students are going to be faced with greater financial pressures. Students should seriously think about the consequences before turning to desperate measures, okay, as there are always other options.
We're just coming up for 4:15, and here's the halfway headlines. David Cameron has announced plans for a network of troubleshooters to support problem families. It will cost the government £448 million, although 60% of the funding will be provided by local councils. A formal end to US military operations in Iraq was signalled by the lowering of the American flag in Baghdad after nearly 9 years of fighting. Former French President Jacques Chirac has been given a 2-year suspended prison sentence after being found guilty of diverting public funds and abusing public trust. There has been a significant increase in the number of students in England who are turning to prostitution to fund their education, a report published by the National Union of Students. Colin Myler, ex-editor of the News of the World, today gave evidence at the Leveson inquiry for the second day running. He accepted that phone hacking had occurred during his time as editor, but stressed it was rarely used. Retail sales fell by 0.4% in November, according to the Office for National Statistics. The data revealed that consumers had cut back on spending on computers, mobile phones, watches and jewellery. Official figures released by the government have shown that more than 1,300 primary schools in England are failing to adequately teach English and maths. New laws have been introduced today which could see dog owners jailed for 2 years if their pet harms another person in a public place. The Ministry of Defence has confirmed that 13,500 military personnel will provide security during London 2012. The number is significantly higher than the 7,000 that had been widely expected. Owners of dangerously out-of-control dogs which harm others in public places could face up to 2 years in jail under new guidelines for judges. The Sentencing Council says its proposals are to ensure irresponsible owners who put people at risk are banned from keeping the animals. Rebecca Lawrence spoke to pensioner Angela Lee Smith and her 16-year-old Border Collie Cross.
What do you think of the new guidelines for irresponsible dog owners?
Might be a bit too lax, really. It's a dog down the end. I'm not sure what sort it was. It may have been a pit bull, but I don't know where it lives.
It attacked your dog?
Yeah. Got to get these dogs off the streets.
Melanie Page, founder of the company Deed Not Breed, campaigns against breed-specific legislation, which are laws that only apply to certain breeds of dogs. She explained what she thought about the new guidelines.
I'm hoping that these guidelines, that these are broadly welcome, these guidelines, and they could be a significant step forward to appropriately sentencing irresponsible owners who allow or encourage dogs to bite. And those owners should receive harsher penalties than those whose dogs accidentally injure a person. guidelines or new legislation need to take into consideration whether a person is a fit and proper person to own a dog. But certainly, in certain circumstances, prison sentences and banning orders are appropriate.
Okay, so with that in mind, is there any other enforcements you'd like to see to be put in place to protect the welfare of the dogs?
But for the welfare of the dogs and for the people, I think rather than the automatic destruction of animals that we see quite often now, we need to be perhaps removing dogs from dangerous owners, if you like, and rehoming those to people who are considered to be fit and proper people to own a dog. But we certainly need, for the welfare of society, we certainly need an education policy in place that allows children in schools to be taught about dog safety in the same way that they're taught about road safety, and the general public, dog owners and non-dog owners, need to be made aware of how to respond and react around dogs and how to read dog behaviour.
We've now got Rebecca Lawrence in the studio to talk about the attack on the dog in Gillingham that was mentioned earlier. So Rebecca, please explain what happened to the woman and her dog.
Well, Angela was a lovely pensioner who had taken care of Rusty for years without any problems. However, one day, when she was out walking him, he was attacked by a neighbourhood dog, who she believed to be a pit bull. Rusty was badly injured in the fight, and Angela narrowly escaped injury herself after she was forced to physically pry the two dogs apart. Angela informed me that Rusty is now too scared to wander away from her side and has been much more agitated since the incident. Angela said that she wished that the pit bull's owner had been punished, as it isn't right to leave violent dogs like that out on the street. And under the new guidelines, I guess they could have been punished.
So, what are the new guidelines?
Well, depending on the severity of the attack, the owners could face a hefty fine, be banned from keeping dogs, be forced to pay compensation to the victims, or even face a jail sentence of up to 2 years.
But what if someone's dog suddenly acts completely out of character and accidentally harms someone or something? What happens then?
Well, animals are very unpredictable, and the judges understand that. If the owner is a first-time offender and they can prove that the dog's behaviour was completely out of character, then they'll probably just get off with paying a fine.
How likely is it that the owner could be jailed because of their dog?
Well, every case is different, and most cases will probably be settled through the payment of a fine. However, if the negligent watch over the dog causes a death or serious injury, then it could be possible that they face a prison sentence. It's all subjective, though.
Where do the dogs go once they've been taken away from their owners?
If a dog is removed from that owner, then it's likely that the dog's been put to sleep, and the owner may be banned from owning dogs again. It's a sad but rare inevitability in some cases.
Thank you, Rebecca.
Families who cause chaos in communities are to be targeted by a new network of troubleshooters. Under the proposed plan, they'll be in charge of ensuring difficult households get the support they need. David Cameron has pledged to spend £500 million in order to provide troubled families with one dedicated worker instead of a string of well-meaning, disconnected officials. This action comes partly in response to the rioting that occurred through the major cities of England last summer. The Prime Minister says he wants to reform a system that currently sees officials treat the symptoms and not the causes.
I think we've all known for years that a relatively small number of families are the source of a large proportion of problems in our society. Drug addiction, alcohol abuse, crime, a culture of disruption and irresponsibility that cascades through generations. The riots were a wake-up call, not a freak incident, but a boiling over of problems that have been simmering away for years. We need a social recovery in Britain every bit as much as we need an economic one.
It could see people being woken up for work, getting children to school, and making sure addicts go to rehab. But Community Secretary Eric Pickles has denied the government is turning into a nanny state.
We're not employing guardian angels, we're putting together a whole package of measures so that existing state agencies, ranging from the benefit agencies through the health service to social services, deal with these families in a properly coordinated way.
This action will cost nearly £450 million. The PM says it's a practical solution to a problem that's costing a fortune.
Last year, the state spent an estimated £9 billion on just 120,000 families. That is around £75,000 per year per family.
We asked residents in Gillingham if they had been affected by troubled families in the past.
There are, obviously. I mean, my families have. My dad gets work and then sometimes he doesn't, sometimes he does. But then, I mean, we really are helping him, so it's a bit fine, but we would like some more jobs.
Yeah, I see a lot, man. I see a lot of troubled ways they deal with life. But I try to keep myself fixed up.
A family that don't keep their children under control, that let them roam the streets, that don't support their education, that they're not fed properly. Just parental guidance. That's what I consider guidance. Love and attention, and to give your children time.
It is thought that the troubleshooters will be chosen by local authorities and will be existing workers of local charities and private firms. With the next round of the FA Cup drawing ever nearer, Gillingham FC is gearing up to their third round draw with Stoke on January the 7th next year. As the Premier League giants take on the local team, I spoke to Stephen Lowe, commercial director at the club, about the effects of such a big game.
As a Devon girl myself, I remember the massive excitement when Exeter drew Manchester United back in 2005. So it's clearly going to be a massive way to kick off the new year for you. Have you got anything special planned for the day of the match?
The tickets were already on sale and they're going really well. At the minute they're just held to season ticket holders and a few others. We've got our cheerleaders that are already in, and we're going to do a collection for Help the Heroes. And so they're bringing along some boys to shake some buckets. They've got mascots to bring onto the pitch, and we're going to really use it as a day to help raise money for Help Heroes, as well as cheer on the boys on the pitch on the day.
You haven't actually priced up the cost of normal tickets, which is obviously going to be something which will appeal to the home fans. Such a game like this, you could have been a massive earner. Why did you decide not to up the prices?
Because we've got regular fans that we need to, this is about rewarding loyalty. Yes, we could price these at £50 and most probably still got a full house, but we've got people that all come on cold Tuesday nights, and we've got to make sure that they are looked after. They stand on the terraces on the cold, wet nights, dreaming of days like a Premier team coming down to Priestfield, and so we had to price it at a normal match rate.
The last time you drew a big name was Aston Villa back in 2009.
That's correct.
That one was on television, though, so obviously you're doing a lot of revenue and publicity. Are you perhaps a little bit disappointed this one won't be televised?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, from a purely commercial perspective, television money, it's what makes the Premier League so financially successful, is TV money, and for the lower league clubs, the opportunity to get a match televised is worth more than £100,000 to the clubs that get, the clubs that are fortunate to get it. And so, yes, we are disappointed, but then we have to live with that. Those decisions are out of our hands.
A general sale opens on the 21st of December. How many tickets do you think are going to be available?
That's a magic question. We don't know yet. In rounded terms, we've got a capacity of just over 11,000. We expect Stoke City to take between 1,000 and 1,500, so we've got about 9,500 for our own fans. What we've done is we've sent them 1,000 tickets for now. If they sell them, we're obliged to let them have more. If they don't sell them, we can open them up to our home fans, providing we can adequately segregate them. We're on about 5,000 ticket sales so far, which is still restricted, and there's more than 3 days to go. So I would expect that we'll have about 2,500 that will go on general release, but I might be wrong.
Okay, finally, looking ahead to the game itself, Tony Pulis, manager of Stoke, returning to Priestfield after managing the club from 95 to 99. I bet you're looking forward to getting one over on your old boss.
Well, it wasn't in my time. I mean, I think Tony will be welcomed back because he had, he will be as an ex-manager here. But absolutely, we're looking to get one over on Stoke, purely to get us into the next round of the Cup and another dibs at bringing the big team down here. That's what we want.
The year's top internet searches have been revealed by Google's annual Zeitgeist programme. The royal wedding came out on top, with the non-existent iPhone 5 coming in second. Interesting results came out of the top 10 What Is searches, with a diverse range of queries including What Is Scampi? We asked some people whether they knew what Scampi is.
It's a fish.
Scampi? Well, like a large shrimp.
Scampi? Oh, I don't know, some fishy thing. That's
all I know.
Or a prawn? Yeah, prawn would be better.
I have no idea. Apparently some kind of, like, it's a food, yeah. Fish or something like that.
scampi is fish, white fish would be better.
I think like a tramp when I hear scampi.
It's a fish, isn't it?
Britons were also keen to know more about US reality star Kim Kardashian after marrying and then divorcing basketball player Chris Humphries in just 3 months. The top search for travel destination was Las Vegas, with New York and Disneyland Paris making up the top three. Top searches for how-to included revise, draw, sleep, while our raunchier side was shown with a high number of searches for how to flirt and how to snog. For those of you still wondering what scampi is, it is a langoustine or Norway lobster, roughly the size of a crayfish. Now over to Jack with the sport.
Hi Eric, thanks. Chelsea manager Andre Villas-Boas has rejected claims over a possible transfer move away from Stamford Bridge for £50 million flop striker Fernando Torres. Today he has also spoke about midfielder Frank Lampard. Lampard has been saying that he does not know why he is not in the Chelsea starting lineup.
There are people who are making great efforts to get into this Chelsea squad. I mean, Lamps is, I think, one of the top five players most used. I mean, every player wants to be involved in every game, but sometimes it's just not possible.
Stoke progressed through into the knockout stages of the Europa League last night despite a 3-1 defeat away at Turkish side Beşiktaş. Controversy in the crowd as the Beşiktaş fans appeared to throw objects at Stoke players Ricardo Fuller and Jermaine Pennant. Fulham crashed out after a 2-2 draw at home to Ons. Once hit the equaliser in the 93rd minute, Martignol is extremely disappointed with the result.
30 seconds before the end, we didn't have the cleverness or experience to keep it in the half. So it's awful to go out of the competition in the way we did.
The fates of Tottenham, Birmingham and Celtic will be decided later tonight. All teams are left with work to do if they wish to join both Manchester clubs and Stoke in the knockout stages. Birmingham must defeat MK Maribor at St Andrews and hope for a Braga win against Club Brugge. If Celtic win their difficult last game away at Udinese, their qualification will be confirmed. Tottenham play away at Shamrock Rovers, knowing that a win may not be enough. They need to overturn a huge goal difference over Rubin Kazan. Harry Redknapp is downbeat about Spurs' prospects.
It'll be a tough game, no doubt about that. You know, and it's a difficult one, really, because, you know, we've left ourselves in an almost impossible position, you know, having lost the game at home to the Greek team. And so it's going to be difficult, but looking forward to the game.
Finally on football, a huge blow for Barcelona in Spain today as David Villa has suffered a fracture in his leg. The injury occurred during Barcelona's game against Al Sadd in the FIFA Club World Cup semi-finals in Yokohama. Villa is looking at 6 months on the sidelines. County cricket has come under scrutiny today from England and Wales Cricket Board anti-corruption chief Chris Watts. He said that it would be naive to think corruption has not affected county cricket. The allegations come in the year that Pakistani cricketers Mohammed Amir, Mohammed Asif, and Salman Butt were sentenced for the spot-fixing scandal. Jockeys Paul Doe and Greg Fairley have been banned from racing for 12 years. They have been banned for not riding a horse to its merits, amongst allegations of corruption in the sport. Horse racing pundit John McCrurick is delighted with the lengthy ban.
66 years involved is an absolute benchmark to anyone getting involved in corruption. They are stamping down it. In the old days, nothing used to happen. 30 people have been banned from racing thanks to Paul Scotney and the BHA's integrity unit.
I will finish with golf today as Lee Westwood carded the lowest round of his career during the first round of the Thailand Golf Championship. He shot a 12 under par 60 and leads the tournament 5 shots clear of American John Daly. In other golf news, English golfer Ian Poulter is leading the way at the JB Weir Masters in Melbourne. After shooting an excellent 65 in his first round, he finds himself 1 shot clear over Australian Ashley Hall, world number one Luke Donald in 4 shots. Back.
Thank you, Jack. That was the sport. David Cameron has announced plans for a network of troubleshooters to support problem families that will cost the government £448 million, although 60% of funding will be provided by local councils. A formal end to the US military operations in Iraq was signalled by the lowering of the American flag in Baghdad after nearly 9 years of fighting. Former French President Jacques Chirac has been given a 2-year suspended prison sentence after being found guilty of diverting public funds and abusing public trust. There has been a significant increase in the number of students in England who are turning to prostitution to fund their education in a report published by the National Union of Students. Colin Meyer, ex-editor of the News of the World, today gave evidence at the Leveson inquiry for the second day running. He accepted that phone hacking had occurred during his time as editor, but stressed it was rarely used. Retail sales fell by 0.4% in November, according to the Office for National Statistics. The data revealed that consumers had cut back spending on computers, mobile phones, watches and jewellery.
And that's all for us from the Centre for Journalism News Radio at 4:30. Have a wonderful afternoon and we look forward to broadcasting to you next term.